Dobrodošli nazaj v nedeljskem venezuelskem programu, ki smo prispeli že do te točke, da se vračamo iz bolj ekonomsko obarvanih tematik nazaj na socialna. In zdaj se bomo posvetili, v bistvu že nekaj časa govorimo o desni opoziciji kot antagonistih v tej zgodbi čavizma. Ne? Nismo pa se še zares posvetili podrobnejši analizi njene tako razredne sestave kot njenih motivacij. In če želimo s to analizo seči preko ustaljenih mitov, po katerih gre ali na eni strani za posem spontan upor nezadovoljnih prebivalcev Venezuele ali po drugi gibanja izključno srednjega in višjega sloja, moramo, kakor pravi Chris Gilbert, analitično prizmo prilagoditi situaciji na tleh z vsemi kontradikcijami vred.
Social class is a complicated thing. I mean, Marx famously said that in capitalism, social classes were divided in two, bourgeois and proletariat. But that's at a high level of abstraction. There's obviously, when a social class hits ground, it's going to have lots of complexities. And probably the tendency has become even more complex in later capitalism, and especially independent capitalism of the kind we have here. So I don't think it should be surprising anyone that a class struggle should have complexities, that you could look at people on the street protesting for the opposition, and they would be people of a relatively modest income. Then, on the other hand, you also do see people of the bourgeoisie, the small bourgeoisie, or even sometimes relatively large bourgeoisie that support the government, that support the national project, the national liberation project, and even the socialist ideal. So the complexities of class shouldn't obscure the entire, the epic dimensions of the class struggle. I think you can see that in general, it's about a bourgeoisie that has links to imperialism on one hand, especially a commercial bourgeoisie and a financial bourgeoisie. And then on the other side, a mass of people, sometimes people who have small businesses or autonomously employed, sometimes unemployed, semi-employed people who are excluded from the productive apparatus, who confront them.
Tudi naš drug sogovornik, to je Fred Fuentes, opozarja, da je treba pri neki analizi opozicije pogledati v njeno jedro in sicer tako v ideološkem smislu kot v organizacijskem smislu. Torej, pobliže pogledamo voditelje opozicije. Zdaj, vodstvo opozicije se od konca 90-ih let ni v bistvu spremenilo. Večina trenutnih voditeljev opozicije je sodelovala tudi v državnem udaru leta 2002. Če pogledamo zgor tri nekak najvidnejše, to so Leopoldo López, ki je vodil protivladne proteste leta 2014, Enrique Capriles Redonski, guverner Zvezne države Miranda, in pa Julio Borges, ki je trenutno predsednik parlamenta, ki ga nadzira opozicija. Vsi trije so bili upleteni v državni udar leta 2002.
When it comes to the sort of the class dynamic of the conflict in Venezuela, I think one has to separate between just simply saying that all opposition protesters are middle class. When clearly that's not the case, and certainly was not the case in the most recent wave of protests from April to July, which were by far the most extensive protest. Extensive, meaning in geographical terms, in the sense of the different locations where these protests occurred. Clearly revealed that it wasn't only middle class people that were involved in this protest. There were definitely protests also that occurred in poorer communities. But it's important to differentiate between what I would argue is the core epicenter, what is the heart of the opposition, what is its most solid base, what is the one that has been there for essentially from day one and continues to be the motor force of this opposition, and who are those that have been grouped or pooled around this project, middle and upper class, who are those that have been pulled around it? Of course, if anyone goes and looks at the electoral results, even in poor places, ever since 98, there have been people voting for the opposition. But I think the idea that was sort of presented in the media, that, or even in, you know, sort of some sort of leftist circles, that this time the protest was different because this time it was just ordinary Venezuelans, it wasn't the opposition that was really spearheading these protests, really are disproven by when we look at where were the epicenters of these protests, who were the main spokespeople for the movement, what were the politics of the movement. All of these factors indicate that once again what we had was, you know, the upper middle class led opposition movement against the Maduro government, the one that has existed since 1998 and, you know, arguably will continue to exist, you know, for a period to come. As I said, with the exception that this time being able to group in other people from other sectors of society around their project, although for their liking or for their ambitions, their aims of overthrowing the government, not enough. And again, that this has been shown with the most recent gubernatorial elections, which has happened on the weekend, where again the opposition was unable to electorally defeat Chavismo.
No, če ne drugega, gre opoziciji priznati vztrajnost. Fuentes ob povedanem opozarja tudi na demografske faktore, ki vplivajo na dojemanje čavističnega projekta. Dober primer tega je recimo vprašanje približevanja mlajšim generacijam, ki nimajo zgodovinskega spomina na čas pred revolucijo. Zdaj, po njegovem mnenju je Chavezova vlada naredila premalo, da bi v bistvu to v ta proces soočanja z izzivi levice na oblasti, ne, levice na poziciji moči, vključila tudi te generacije.
In terms of the demographics, I think that's definitely true, what Eva Gollinger says. You could see anyone who's essentially, you know, in Chavismo, you know, Chavez, Maduro have essentially been in power now for 20 years. So anyone who was any age from, you know, 18, which is the voting age, to arguably 25, pushing on 30, their entire political life, you know, experience is just Chavismo. And of course, when the situation as it is in Venezuela today is so very, you know, very dangerous, it was so very difficult. You know, the level of the crisis that is occurring is so deep. You know, of course, it's much easier. Or, you know, to sort of, you know, be won over to the argument that there must be something better than this, or be, you know, be at the forefront of the protest. Again, here, you know, I wouldn't want to say therefore every young person is against the government either, but this has certainly been a challenge that the government has to look at, is how to work on this issue of being able to mobilize young people towards this project. And it's a real challenge of, you know, how the left is generally is largely an oppositionalist force. In very few places in the world is it in power. You know, it generally builds itself on radical politics of rejection of the status quo. And yeah, how do you as a left in power, essentially seen as the status quo, able to continue to rejuvenate and radicalize and involve these young people in the project? And I think this is where perhaps the sort of problems that I mentioned or, you know, briefly touched on in terms of building on sort of processes of organization that are occurring and how, in some cases, state policy, government policy has hampered rather than helped to reinvigorate that level of organization. And I think, you know, this is a real challenge that the government has had to think about all throughout the whole period.
Za prisotnost študentstva in mlade generacije na ulicah je pogosta tema v medijskem poročanju o venezuelskih protestih. Zdaj, venezuelski izobraževalni sistem oziroma visoko šolstvo je nekako sestavljeno iz treh delov oziroma iz treh vrst univerz, in sicer eno so zasebne univerze, potem so javne univerze, ki so se nekako ohranile še iz prejšnjega sistema, in pa bolivarijanske univerze, ki so bile v času čavizma ustanovljene na novo. Federico Fuentes opozarja, da je na udeležbo študentov na teh protestih potrebno gledati tudi skozi to prizmo.
The issue of winning over young people to the government's project is one that they've had a big challenge, and particularly if we look at, for instance, the university sectors. The Venezuela's university sector is largely divided into three, can be divided into three sectors: the private universities, the existing public autonomous universities, and the newly created Bolivarian universities. Now, the newly created Bolivarian universities, largely involving people who are excluded from the old university sector, by and large tend to be largely people who are favourable to the government. These are people who, you know, traditionally would not have had any ability to access, you know, higher education, university education for the first time are able to do so. But in the public universities and very much so in the private universities, largely have been the domain of opposition student politics, and certainly not of left-wing or Chavista sort of politics. And this has been a constant factor throughout the whole period. And one factor, only one factor to explain this or to add to this sort of dilemma that the government has faced, apart from what we've talked about, this sort of general, this generational issue, is that, you know, early on in the piece, those who were committed to the project, the young people who were committed to the project, very much were, I suppose, mobilised by the government to go into the local communities as part of these social missions, in some ways vacating the universities and leaving them in the hands of opposition student politics, and have not then been able to recover that ground that they've lost for a long period of time.
Naš sogovorec Chris Gilbert v politikah, politiki in delovanju opozicije vidi številne fašistoidne elemente. Denimo, recimo, po primer mobilizacije segmentov delavskega razreda strani predstavnikov antičavističnega buržoaznega omrežja moči, prisotnost izrazito rasističnih tendenc tekom protestov in nasplošno tekom delovanja. In zdaj tudi, če se nam zdi oznaka malce pretirana, če hočemo resno nekako hranjati pač neko zgodovinsko relevantno pojmovanje fašizma, je pa njegova analiza narave opozicijskega nasilja definitivno na mestu.
So, but I think other elements that point to their fascist thing is their explicit use of violence, I mean their direct violence. They use violence in an irrational way. The left typically uses violence for to achieve as a tactic, which is subordinate to strategic ends. But I think the left violence and many of the struggles during the summer, I mean, the right violence, what the right did during the summer, the right-wing youth here, they actually killed each other quite often. There's pretty good evidence that they managed to kill people in their own ranks, sometimes through accidents and sometimes not. So there's a kind of irrational use of violence, for its own sake, which, you know, you might connect to the Spanish fascist idea of long live death. I think Miana Stray said that.
Na tem mestu bi nekaj pozornosti posvetili še temi, ki je za trenutno posredno povezana. V bistvu vprašanje rasnih odnosov na podlagi barve poti, odnosov na podlagi izvora etničnega in tako naprej. Kjer se Venezuele splošno tako nekam širšem dojemanju ne vidi ravno kot države, ki bi imela izrazit problem z rasizmom. Ne. Čeprav je jasno zaznamovana z dediščino kolonializma, jasno se na njenih, nije v nekem zgodovinskem obdobju njeno gospodarstvo uporabljalo služensko delovno silo. Predvsem pa recimo v kontekstu govora o opoziciji bi bilo napačno iti mimo samega dejstva, da je veliko bolj bledolika kot čavistični podporniki, recimo temu. Ne? Fred Fuentes to bolje okarakterizira.
Well, look, I think if we talk about sort of, you know, race, ethnicity, these sort of questions are in Venezuela, you know, the first thing to note is that whilst Venezuela is largely presented as a sort of a country that has not really suffered from these sort of issues of race and of racism, yeah, it's very clear the deep-seated racism that exists in Venezuelan society, particularly targeted at the Afro-descendant community. So, you know, it's very marked if you just look at, for instance, photos of pro and anti-government rallies, the different skin color that you'll see, the much whiter, middle class, upper class sort of supporters of the opposition are counterposed to the much darker skinned supporters of the government. And this racism very much has expressed itself at different levels throughout this sort of the opposition to the Chavez government. You know, most famously, you know, or most commonly, you know, referred to in the media was the constant sort of referrals references to Chavez from the opposition, particularly in newspapers, in comic strips, in the newspapers, you know, referring to him as a monkey and you know, sort of portraying him with sort of monkey-like features. And this was because, you know, Chavez was, you know, arguably the first president with both an Afro, but even to a certain extent indigenous ancestry or history in his bloodline. But perhaps more importantly, was very vocal and very, very open about this. You know, he constantly spoke out about this background. So the government has made a real attempt to promote and improve the positions of Afro-descendant people in Venezuela who, you know, depending on, you know, these things are very hard to, you know, sort of characterize and many times can be, you know, come down to sort of, you know, questions in a census of who identifies as what. But, you know, important studies have sort of shown that we're talking about, you know, 60-75% of the population in some way or another is Afro-descendant. And in fact, Margarita Island, which is part of Venezuela, but just off, you know, in the Caribbean, just off the coast there, was, you know, a very huge, important port of call for slaves that were being brought over from Africa and then disseminated throughout the region.
V bistvu sorodna problematiko je čavistična vlada prepoznala pri vprašanju vključevanja domorodnih ljudstev v organe in mehanizme odločanja, kjer je v bistvu imela v predčavističnem obdobju so bile te konfrontacije zelo omejene ali na neke akademske antropološke stike ali pa na pač direktno izganjanje teh ljudi iz območij, na katerih prebivajo, ali zaradi izsekavanja ali zaradi drugih razlogov. In sam Chavez se je v obdobju, ko je bil premeščen zaradi njegove politične vprašljivosti, ko je še služil v vojski, bil premeščen na neko gorato, v neko gorato območje, kjer se je pridružil antropološki odpravi, ki je šla v gozdove vzpostavljati stik z tam živečimi domorodnimi ljudstvi in preko tega naj bi na osebni ravni tudi začutil oziroma uvidel problematiko, ki jo živijo te ljudje iz dneva v dan. In sedaj bo tudi Fuentes povedal, kaj se je recimo poleg zapisa pravic teh ljudstev v ustavo in drugih odločevalnih mehanizmov, kaj je čavistična vlada na tem področju naredila.
Chavez government has really attempted to sort of reinvigorate to promote pride in this aspect of Venezuela's history, together with that of the indigenous cultures, and importantly, a lot of this has been enshrined in the constitution that was, you know, publicly debated and discussed and voted upon, and one of the first steps that the government did. So a lot of these rights that have to do with, for instance, ability for indigenous communities to demarcate ancestral lands have been included in both in the constitution and then afterwards in law. And going back to the reference to communal councils, again here the government has made it clear that for communal councils in areas where it's indigenous populations, and indigenous population in Venezuela is quite small, 2-3% of the population, and most of those located in only a couple of the states, in only 3 or 4 of Venezuela's 23 states. But in those areas, the indigenous communities themselves can basically given allowances for being able to run their councils using their own traditions and customs and practices when it comes to how to select local leaders, things like that. We've also seen in terms of the Afro-descendant community, you know, a real promotion of that, both in a symbolic level for the number of ministers that have been, selected into cabinet that are quite clearly from an Afro-descendant background, but also the setting up of cultural institutions to recover this sort of lost history of Venezuela and promotion of these cultures through different cultural activities. And most importantly, it's very much this sort of segment of the community, poor Afro-descendant Venezuelans, and I would add women, poor women, Afro-descendant women, who have been the real backbone of a lot of the community organisation that I was referred to before, with the social missions, the community councils, the communes, and that continue to represent in many ways the backbone of Chavismo as a political movement in Venezuela today.
Torej, če povzamemo, no kljub vsem prizadevanjem, da se bi prikazala kot razredno ali rasno nezaznamovana, je sestava opozicije oziroma njenega organizacijskega in ideološkega jedra definitivno vse prej kot to. Zdaj, samo dejstvo, da se v večini zahodnega tiska prikazuje kot neka monolitna tvorba, ki je sestavljena zgolj iz samih legitimnih žrtev državnega nasilja, če o ničemer drugem priča o popolni odsotnosti poročanja, ki ne bi bilo ideološko zaznamovano strani interesov tako globalne hegemonije kot njenih lokalnih predstavnikov.